Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 2, the activities of Maharaj Agnidra. Text 6. Now, how do you deal with these prose verses? Okay. So the verse is in prose, and we will go directly to the synonyms. Please repeat after me. Tum to her. Eva indeed. Avidure nearby. Madhu Karim Iva. Like a honeybee. Sumanasa. Beautiful flowers. Upaji Grantim. Smelling. Divija. Of those born in the heavenly planets. Manuja, of those born in human society. Manaha, mind. Nayana, for the eyes. Alada, pleasure. Dughai, producing. Gati, by her movement. Vihara, by pastimes. Vridya, by shyness. Vinaya, by humility. Avaloka, by glancing. Suswara Akshara, by her sweet voice. Avayavai, and by the limbs of the body. Manasi, in the mind. Ninam, of men. Kusuma Ayudasya, of Cupid, who has a flower arrow in his hand. Vidadatim, making. Vivaram, oral reception. Nijamukha, from her own mouth. Vigalita, pouring out. Amrita Asava, nectar like honey. Sahasa, in her smiling. Basana, and talking. Amoda, by the pleasure. Madaanda, blinded by intoxication. Madhukara, of bees. Nikara, by groups. Uparodena, because of being surrounded. Druta, hasty. Padam, of feet. Vinyasena, by stylish stepping. Valgu, a little. Spandana, moving. Stana, breasts. Kalasha, like water pots. Kabara, of her braids of hair. Bhara, weight. Rasanam, the belt on the hips. Devim, the goddess. Tat, avalokanena, simply by seeing her. Vivritta avasarasya, taking the opportunity of. Bhagavata, of the greatly powerful. Makaradvajasya, of Cupid. Vasham, under the control. Upanita, being brought in. Jaravat, as if stunned. Iti, thus. Ha, certainly. Uvacha, he said. Translation. Like a honeybee, the apsara smelled the beautiful and attractive flowers. She could attract the minds and vision of both humans and demigods by her playful movements, her shyness and humility, her glances, the very pleasing sounds that poured from her mouth as she spoke, and the motion of her limbs. By all these qualities, she opened for Cupid, who bears an arrow of flowers, a path of oral reception into the minds of men. When she spoke, nectar seemed to flow from her mouth. As she breathed, the bees, mad for the taste of her breath, tried to hover about her beautiful lotus-like eyes. Disturbed by the bees, she tried to move hastily. But as she raised her feet to walk quickly, her hair, the belt on her hips and her breasts, which were just like water jugs, also moved in a way that made her extremely beautiful and attractive. Indeed, she seemed to be making a path for the entrance of Cupid, who is most powerful. Therefore, the prince, completely subdued by seeing her, spoke to her as follows. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. How a beautiful woman's movements and gestures, her hair and the structure of her breasts, hips, and other bodily features attract the minds not only of men, but also of demigods, is very finely described in this statement. The words divija and manuja specifically emphasize that the attraction of feminine gestures is powerful everywhere within this material world, both on this planet and in the higher planetary systems. It is said that the standard of living in the higher planetary systems is thousands and thousands of times higher than the standard of living on this planet. Therefore, the bodily features of the women there are also thousands and thousands of times more attractive than the features of the women on Earth. The Creator has constructed women in such a way that their beautiful voices and movements and the beautiful features of their hips, their breasts, and the other parts of their bodies attract the members of the opposite sex, both on Earth and on other planets, awakening their lusty desires. When one is controlled by Cupid, or the beauty of women, he becomes stunned like matter, such as stone. Captivated by the material movements of women, he wants to remain in this material world. Thus, one's promotion to the spiritual world is checked simply by seeing the beautiful bodily structure and movements of women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore warned all devotees to beware of the attraction of beautiful women and materialistic civilization. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to see even Pratap Rudra Maharaj because he was a very opulent person in the material world. Lord Chaitanya said in this connection, Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajan On Mukasya. Those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord because they are very serious about going back home, back to Godhead, should be very careful to avoid seeing the beautiful gestures of women and should also avoid seeing persons who are very rich. Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajanon Mukhasya Param Param Jigamisor Bhavasagarasya Sandarshanam Vishayinam Atayoshitam Cha Hahantahanta Vishabhakshanatopyasadu. Alas, for a person who is seriously desiring to cross the material ocean and engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification, or seeing a woman who is similarly interested, is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 11.8. One who is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, should not contemplate the attractive features of women or the opulence of rich men. Such contemplation will check one's advancement in spiritual life. Once a devotee is fixed in Krishna consciousness, however, these attractions will not agitate his mind. Hare Krishna. So this is a very serious problem. The attractive features of the opposite sex. Because attraction and attachment to the opposite sex binds one to the material world and destroys one's desire for self-realization. Jnana vijnana nashanam. The Bhagavad Gita says that lusty desires, jnana, theoretical knowledge, and vijnana, applied knowledge, nashanam, are destroyed. So we have to be very, very careful. And as anyone can imagine by hearing the description of the beautiful damsel sent by the heavenly, sent by Lord Brahma from the higher planets, it is not within the power of any man to resist such attraction by his own strength. In broader terms, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Devi hiesa gunamayi mama maya duratyaya, that this material nature consisting of the three modes is very difficult to overcome. Duratyaya. Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. But one who surrenders to Krishna can easily cross over it. Now, surrender to Krishna can take place in a moment, especially if one is advanced from one's past life. But for most people, surrendering to Krishna is a gradual process. And in the course of that gradual process, there are traps. We are trying to walk on the path of spiritual progress, but there are traps. And perhaps the biggest trap for a man is the attractive features of woman. And the same could be said for women in relation to men. It is compared to a hole or a pit that's covered by grass. You're walking along, and because it's covered by grass, it looks like solid ground, but when you step on it, you fall down into a pit, and it is very hard to get out. So the scriptures give us warnings so that we don't blindly fall into a pit and then be stuck for we don't know how long. So from the beginning, we should be careful. The Bhagavad Gita says, Jayato Vishayam Pungsam, that by contemplating the objects of the senses, lust develops. And from lust, attachment, and there's a whole chain that concludes with bewilderment of memory. One forgets who he is. He forgets what his purpose in life is, and he falls into the material whirlpool. So we have to be careful from the beginning not to allow the mind to dwell on material objects, especially for men, the attractive feature of women, and the material opulence of rich people. Because even if we don't have the intention, just by the mind being fixed on it, attachment develops, lust develops. Now, because of the dangers of worldly association, sages and saintly persons generally used to retire to secluded places, like the jungles or mountains. Because if you live in cities, how can you avoid seeing women, those of the opposite sex, and material opulence, rich people with material comforts? So therefore, it's recommended in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures that those who are endeavoring for self-realization should go to a secluded place. But of course, even in secluded places, there is danger. The ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam tells the history of Subari Muni. Subari Muni was a very powerful mystic, and he meditated underwater for about 30,000 years. That was in a previous age when people lived 100,000 years. And while he was within the water, he sensed some movement, and there were two fish engaged in sex life. And seeing the two fish awakened lusty desires in him. And so he came out of the water and went to the palace of the king and asked to marry one of his daughters. And the king said, if you can have whoever wants to marry you. Because of being in the water, he was all shriveled and he looked terrible. So the king said, whichever of them is ready to marry you, you can marry. But none of them wanted to marry him. So he considered, actually, nobody will marry me the way I look now. So with his power from his austerities, he converted his body into that of a beautiful, attractive young man. Then when he went back to the palace, all the daughters wanted to marry him. So he married all of them. But after some time, he remembered, you know, we were talking about how one forgets by this cycle, Jayatam Vishayopumsan, in the end one forgets one's actual self and falls into the material whirlpool. But fortunately, by Krishna's grace, he remembered. And he decided, why am I wasting my time? And he left the palace and he went into the jungle to resume his spiritual practices. And his wives, who had nowhere else to go, followed him. And he engaged in intense spiritual practices in the jungle. And in the end he was liberated and went back home, back to Godhead. And all of his wives also went back home, back to Godhead. Which Srila Prabhupada says shows the value of a woman having a husband who is spiritually strong. That just by serving him, she can also get the same benefit of his spiritual advancement. Now, if you cannot escape bad association, even underwater, where will you go? So commenting on this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains that, yes, one should be away from bad association, materialistic association. That is an accepted fact, that one should go to a solitary place. But even in a so-called solitary place, there can be bad association. For Subari Muni, the bad association was the fish. So Srila Prabhupada explains that a safer position than being in a secluded place is to be in the association of devotees. Bharat Maharaj also, he went into the forest. It's described that he gave up his opulent kingdom, his beautiful wife, his obedient children, everything. Just like a person leaves the stool room after he finishes his business. He was so detached. But in the forest, he became attached to a deer. And there too, there is an indication that the difficulty was that he did not have the association of devotees. Now there's another point which is worth noting, and that is that if we commit offenses, especially Vaishnav aparad or Dham aparad, the result is that one develops material desires and can fall down. And Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in relation to Subari Muni, that he had committed an offense to the great Vaishnav Garuda, the bird carrier of Vishnu, because Garuda came to the Yamuna River. Subari Muni was doing his austerities and meditation in the Yamuna River, and he was trying to catch some fish to eat. And Subari Muni, he gave shelter to those fish in opposition to the will of Garuda. And this was considered Vaishnav aparad. Srila Prabhupada says it's an offense to impede the activities of a Vaishnav. And because of his offense, he fell down. So this is it's a very difficult problem, how to practice spiritual life in the material world. And in our case, in general, Srila Prabhupada did not recommend that we try to practice Krishna consciousness in seclusion. He often quoted Prahlad Maharaj. It's mentioned in the verse Alada, pleasure, great pleasure, in relation to the bodily features of the woman. But Prahlad, Prakista Rupena Prahlad, Prahlad it means one who is experiencing pleasure to the highest degree. That's Prahlad, and he realized that pleasure in relation to the lotus feet of the Lord. Well, anyway, Prahlad Maharaj says, Prayena Deva Munayo Savi Mukti Kama, that generally saintly persons, munis, Prayena Deva Munayo Savi Mukti Kama, they are interested in their own liberation. Kama, they also have desire. They also have desire, but their desire is for liberation. Svavi mukti kama. And therefore they wander, charanti, in mountains and jungles, avoiding the general populace. But Prahlad Maharaj says, I do not want to be like them. I do not want to go back home, back to Godhead alone. But I want to take as many of these poor fools and rascals who are rotting in the material world with me. And therefore I am always thinking of ways to bring them to the shelter of your lotus feet. He's praying to Lord Nrisimhadeva. Because he knows that without taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, they cannot be happy. People cannot be happy. So, this is a very elevated prayer. Generally, even devotees who come to Krishna consciousness have mixed desires. They want to serve, but they also may want some material facility or comfort or enjoyment. But Srila Prabhupada has taught us and engaged us in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. And the essence of this approach is to replace selfish desires for sense gratification with pure desires for devotional service. It's not that Prahlad has no desire. We cannot become like stones without desire. But we have to change the quality of the desire from kama, for our own sense gratification, to prema, to the desire to please Krishna, the senses of Krishna. And there is a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that describes this process. And the purport to this verse is very significant for us. Yat pada pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karma shayam gratiti tam udgratayanta santa tadvan narikta matayo yatayo pirudha shoto ganas tamaranam bhajavasudevam. Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya. It means that devotees derive pleasure under the soft pink lotus feet of the Lord. Matariktaya, those who are not devotees, they cannot uproot deep-rooted desires for material enjoyment, which come like waves. One can only overcome those desires by worshipping Krishna, and therefore the verse ends Bhajavasudevam. This is Sanat Kumar's instruction to King Prithu. We find the same principle earlier in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janiyati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahai, to come that by engaging in devotional service to Vasudev, Krishna, knowledge and detachment from material things automatically follow. Now, waves come without cessation, so the waves of desire for sense gratification also come without cessation. So how can we overcome them? Srila Prabhupada gives the example that the waves of a river flow into the ocean without any end. But sometimes the waves of the ocean, during high tide, the waves of the ocean overflood the river. And the waves of the ocean become more prominent than the waves of the river. So in the same way, one who takes shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord with a desire to serve Him, his desires to serve the Lord can become more prominent than desires for sense gratification. And therefore, one replaces the inferior desires by superior desire. We cannot be free from desire. And Srila Prabhupada explains that a devotee makes so many plans for the service of the Lord that the desires for material enjoyment become insignificant. Now, it's not, first of all, it's not very good to use oneself as an example, and second of all, the topic is not very palatable from a certain point of view. But still, it is relevant, so I will tell you that there is a great history to Hare Krishna land. The owner of the land took money from Srila Prabhupada, but he actually did not want to give the land to Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to keep the land and keep the money. And there were many intrigues. So one day, this is very early in this history of the struggle, one day Mr. Nair said, we have to go to meet the lawyer downtown. So he came with his car, and I don't remember the exact configuration of the front seat, but Mr. Nair got in the back seat, and then he put me in the middle, and then on my side he kept a woman. So I thought, this is not a good situation for a brahmachari to be sitting next to a woman. But Mr. Nair was a very sort of influential person and volatile person. And I don't know, somehow I was intimidated. I thought, anyway, what's the big deal? So there's Mr. Nair. So then I sat as close to him as possible and kept a little space between me and the woman. So then the woman, after some time, put her hand on my leg and started moving her hand up my leg, and I was very confused, because I was like so intimidated by Mr. Nair, I didn't know if I should say something. I thought, maybe she's his friend and maybe it'll be like embarrassing. So anyway, yeah, at the age of 24, my mind and senses started to go wild. And it like heated up to such a point that I was becoming reckless, thinking, well, anyway, you know, who cares? But then I thought with my intelligence that if I were to do anything with her, eventually it would get out. Eventually the news would get out. And it would very seriously damage Srila Prabhupada's movement, because I was the temple president. It would reflect on me, of course, but it would reflect on Srila Prabhupada, and it would reflect on the whole movement. And I thought, because in that bewildered state, I was ready to forego my own best interest, if you want to say that, but I was not ready to do something that would cause harm to Srila Prabhupada or his mission. And then I had the realization that what I thought at the time, I actually love Srila Prabhupada more than I love myself, because for myself I was ready to be reckless under the influence of that energy, but not at the cost of Srila Prabhupada's mission. So this is maybe not a very good example, but it's an example of a spiritual desire being stronger than a material desire. Otherwise, to try to just negate material desires without a positive alternative does not work. So our desire to serve Guru, our desire to serve Krishna, should be stronger. We have to make it stronger. And the way to make it stronger is to follow the regulative principles. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the best is to be spontaneously attracted to me, to be spontaneously absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But if one is not on that platform, then one should follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga, because by following the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga, one develops a desire to attain me. So that desire to serve Krishna is natural within the heart, nitya siddha Krishna prema. It is already there, but it is dormant. It has to be awakened, and it's awakened by the association of good devotees in the process of chanting and hearing about Krishna. So we really need to stay in the association of devotees, specifically in the association of pure devotees whose desires are not mixed, and associate with them in chanting and hearing about Krishna. That's the real value of the association. And that will protect us. That will cleanse the heart, Cheto Darpano Marjanam, and give us a higher taste. As Srila Prabhupada quotes, man is a social animal. He cannot live without company. And the Bhagavatam says that everyone knows that attachment to the material is the greatest source of bondage. But the same attachment, when transferred to self-realized souls, opens the door to liberation. So we cannot live without company. So we have to change the quality of the company from materialistic people interested in sense gratification to devotees interested in pure devotional service, and stay very deeply immersed in that association. During the ecstatic kirtan this morning in front of the beautiful deities, I was thinking, who could be attracted to anything else? Like, it's so attractive. And if we could do that 24 hours a day, there would be no chance. There'd be no chance. But alas, we don't do it 24 hours a day. And what about the rest of the time? So during the rest of the time, we have to be engaged in devotional service. Now it's very interesting that in 1976, no, 75 or 76, Srila Prabhupada's new disciple named Ambarish Das, who was Alfred Ford, the great grandson of Henry Ford, who's accredited with inventing the automobile and forming the Ford Motor Company, he came to Bombay with Srila Prabhupada. And so I was taking him out to meet important people to get support for the Juhu project. And I was a very rigid brahmachari. And I was dragging poor Ambarish all over Bombay to meet rich people. And I had already made friends with almost every pious industrialist and rich person in Bombay. So the only ones that were left were the ones who were not pious. And I thought, oh, you know, I can phone them and say Alfred Ford has come from America, he wants to meet you, and we can get in their door. But when they saw him, I was thinking they would think, oh, Alfred Ford has become a Hare Krishna devotee, there must be something to it. But because they were not pious, most of them thought, what's the matter with him? He could be enjoying in America as a part of the Ford family dynasty, and he's a Hare Krishna devotee walking the streets of Bombay. What's wrong with him? So it was a very unpalatable experience for Ambarish. And the poor fellow, like, he'd get so thirsty. He wasn't used to this type of austerity. He'd get so thirsty, and I was so rigid that I considered it to be maya, to like get a fruit juice or something. And anyway, so after about 10 days of this, he approached Srila Prabhupada and said, you know, instead of Giriraj having to go out and meet all these people and raise funds for the temple, I'll just give the money. But Prabhupada said no. Anyway, that was a very deep discussion. There's many, one could think of many reasons why Prabhupada said no, but he didn't accept that offer. And at that time in our movement, pretty much, if you became a devotee, you joined the temple. There was no congregation then, and it was sort of natural because most of the people who joined were young, and the only association outside the temple was materialistic. So the only alternative was to move in the temple and live with the devotees. But Srila Prabhupada wanted Ambarish Prabhu to work, because he said he wanted people to understand that you can be a devotee of Krishna and also be, you know, a responsible member of the community and earn and do the things that other people do that are considered respectable in society. So Ambarish asked, does it have to be in the Ford Motor Company? And Prabhupada said, no, just some work. You should do some work. And then Ambarish said, what will I do about association? And Srila Prabhupada replied that while you're working, if you think, I'm doing this for Krishna, that will be your association. So that is a very important point, especially for working people. Of course, the best is to work with devotees, but if we don't have that good fortune and we have to work with materialistic people, what will be our association? Our association will be thinking, I'm doing this for Krishna. Then we'll be thinking of Krishna, Guru and Krishna, and we'll be associating with them in our minds. And then, when we come home, we should associate with devotees and chant and hear about Krishna. Otherwise, we can be influenced. Can definitely be influenced. So we need balance. And so as to avoid becoming too preoccupied with making money that would entail a lot of mundane association, Srila Prabhupada advised that we keep our life simple. But then again, you know, Varnashram Dharma, a Brahmin will live very simply, and Kshatriya, according to his nature and his work, he may need more facility because he has to rule over people, he has to impress them with his opulence. And Vaishya, depending on the situation, but he'll have his type of opulence. But basically, one should not make one's life too complicated. Now, coming back to desire, there's a very beautiful verse in the 10th canto, 13th chapter, the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada translated. Lord Brahma, about Lord Brahma stealing the cowherd boys and calves. And as you know, or I hope you know, from reading Srimad Bhagavatam or Krishna book, after a moment, Lord Brahma got worried and he came back to the site where he had stolen the cowherd boys and calves. That was a moment in his time. That was a year of earthly time. And he saw the same cowherd boys and calves, and then Krishna manifests to Lord Brahma that all those cowherd boys were actually Vishnu forms. They all transformed into Vishnu forms. And the Bhagavatam described that by Vishnu's glancing and smiling, he created and protected the desires of his devotees. So this is also very significant. That now, Srila Prabhupada discusses in the purport that what does it mean, the desires of the devotee, because everyone knows that pure devotees have no desires. You know, bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakala ashanta, that ordinary karmis, they desire material enjoyment, and gyanis they desire liberation, mukti, and yogis, they desire mystic powers or siddhis. And because they all have desires, none of them is peaceful. But Krishna bhakta nishkam ata eva shanta, only a devotee of Krishna is without desires, and therefore only he is peaceful. So nishkam, devotees are nishkam, without desires. So what does it mean that Lord Vishnu, by his sidelong glance and smile, creates and protects the desires of the devotees? It means, as we have been discussing, desires to serve the Lord. Not personal desires. Desires to serve the Lord. And then Srila Prabhupada, he was dictating this, lying on his bed in the Krishna Balaram temples at the very end. He related the verse to the Krishna Balaram temple. And he said that originally this was a vacant plot of land, and what formerly was just a corner somewhere has become a place of pilgrimage, because a devotee thought, let there be a temple and seva, devotional service. Such are the desires of a devotee. So, indirectly, Srila Prabhupada was saying that that spiritual desire was placed in his heart by the Lord and protected by the Lord. And so what was once an empty plot has become a place of pilgrimage. So all around us, we see Srila Prabhupada's desires manifest. Certainly the Juhu temple is a manifestation of Srila Prabhupada's desire to serve Sri Sri Radha Rasa Bihari. And bless people with Krishna consciousness. So this is our line, but it requires great spiritual power. Otherwise, dealing with wealth and women, one can fall victim. Many in ISKCON, not just in ISKCON, in the history of the world, many, as Prabhupada says, many stalwarts have fallen prey to the attraction of wealth and women. So there's risk. But if we stay very close in the association of pure devotees, absorbed in chanting and hearing, and work genuinely, like Srila Prabhupada, for the benefit of others, not with some duplicity that, oh, people will see I'm a big devotee, they will bow down and worship me. Again, I'll use my example. It's not, I guess it's better to point the finger at myself than at others. So I had the idea of taking sannyas. There was a particular time when devotees who were considered more junior to me were taking sannyas. His Holiness Lokanath Swami, His Holiness Navayogendra Swami, His Holiness Sridhar Swami. So everyone was thinking, well, what about Giriraj, you know? So His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami went to Srila Prabhupada and told Srila Prabhupada that I wanted to take sannyas, which I never said. And then Srila Prabhupada called for me. And he said, so you want to take sannyas? Gopal Krishna says you want to take sannyas. So it's the same thing. I never like to contradict people or embarrass people, so I just remain silent. So then he said, why do you want to take sannyas? So I knew the answer to facilitate my preaching. So he said, you cannot preach as a brahmachari? I said, well, yes. So then he said, are there any other reasons that you would like to take sannyas for? And then I couldn't think of any. The only ones I could think of were, people will offer me obeisances, I'll get the Maha Prasad. All these bad reasons rushed through my mind, but I made a quick calculation. I can't say, tell Srila Prabhupada. So I was silent and I said no. So then I offered my obeisances and left. And then when I came back in the evening, one of Prabhupada's secretaries approached me and said, Prabhupada really didn't appreciate your idea of taking sannyas. He said, what does Giriraj think, that by taking sannyas he'll sprout four arms for preaching? And then he came to the point. Giriraj can never leave Bombay. This was the point. He didn't want me to leave, and he was afraid that if I took sannyas I would have that facility. And it's true, Prabhupada did say sannyas means if you don't like a place, you can leave. So, yes, the desire, it was Prabhupada's desire. I remember, once I commented to someone like I wanted to preach more. I felt I was too entangled with the management. And one of my godbrothers very wisely said, actually, the Juhu Project is Srila Prabhupada's preaching. We're not actually the preachers. Srila Prabhupada is the preacher. And our duty is just to facilitate his preaching. But he did say also that Madhvacharya had established Mutz as a facility for his disciples to preach. And so I'm also establishing these temples for you. So preaching, but it should be without duplicity. Not that, I'll get a big position, I'll get a big office, and I'll get money and respect, but it should be genuine. And even that will come from association. If we associate with pure devotees, we'll develop the desires of pure devotees. If we associate with materialistic people, if we're not completely in the mood of service, then we can be affected by their association. If we associate with mixed devotees, a lot of pious people are sort of mixed devotees. They want to do some service, but really they want to enjoy the material world. And that association can affect us. So you have to really stick to the association of pure devotees, chanting and hearing. And then we can actually engage people without being affected. But we have to be very careful. Srila Prabhupada was very powerful. As time goes on, we're realizing how powerful he was and how extraordinary he was. And he could do things that we might not be able to do. Like once some Swami Narayan sadhus came to meet him in his room here, and they told him, like, they never look at women, they never look above the feet of women, and they consider that anyone who sees the face of a woman is fallen. And Srila Prabhupada said, I look at the faces of women. Does that mean I'm fallen? So if one is, like Prabhupada says in the very last line of the purport, once a devotee is fixed in Krishna consciousness, however, these attractions will not agitate his mind. So that's the goal, to become fixed, at least nishta, past the stage of anartha. Pass through anartha navritti, come to nishta and be fixed. Then one can actually engage wealth and women in the Lord's service without being affected. Of course, even then, you know, one should remain humble. Now I've passed a certain stage, now I can do anything. Actually, once a disciple wrote Srila Prabhupada that he felt he was beyond sex desire. And Prabhupada said, you should never think like that. Never think like that. So yes, we should always feel dependent on the mercy of Guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas and stay in their association and be very careful in dealing with the material energy. And if we do have to deal with it, which we do, because otherwise we can't preach, as far as possible, we should also do that in strong association. definitely not alone, and best in strong association. And that association will protect us. So Srila Prabhupada has created ISKCON to produce pure devotees who will be good association. So we should take advantage of the association and become pure devotees. Then it will all work very nicely, and then even, of course, who's Hari Das Thakur, but even if Maya Devi herself comes in the form of a prostitute, by the devotee's spiritual strength, he will make Maya Devi a devotee. He will not become a victim of Maya Devi. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes. Ekalavya Prabhu. Mic for Ekalavya Prabhu. I saw you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your wonderful class. My question is that you are on the topic of param drisva navartate, getting a higher taste.
Yes.
In order to overcome the material desires, especially the allurements of women and money. I've heard that you've given some seminars in America on the holy name. Can you share with us some realizations of how chanting the holy name can help us achieve this higher taste and overcome these material allurements?
Well, chanting the holy name can certainly give us the higher taste, but it should be done without offenses. If we chant with offenses, it will have effect, but it will take a long time. And chanting really means offenseless. That means the clearing stage. And the main offense, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is pramadaha, or inattentiveness. If we allow inattentive chanting, then the other offenses can flourish. Whereas if we chant attentively, then the other offenses are stopped. So the idea is to spend time with the holy name, not be worried that, oh, I have to finish my rounds, I have to do this, I have to do that. And again, it comes back to your lifestyle. You know, if you're a brahmachari, vanaprast, or sannyasi, you have more time. But grihasthas, they may struggle with time. And therefore, they should try to work in such a way that they have time. And the ladies, now what I'm going to say may sound very old-fashioned. It is old-fashioned, but still it's sort of good to be reminded. But Srila Prabhupada had a very good friend named Mr. Brijratan Mota, who was extremely intelligent. I mean, I saw myself, so many big industrialists would come to him for advice. And it was the culture when I first came to India, that the women would do puja. In fact, I met, I think it was one of the first really big industrialists I met in Calcutta. He had a steel mill. And his wife would spend the whole day doing puja. And he told me that actually I am successful because of her puja. I could not do what I'm doing were it not for her puja. So that was the culture when we first came. We stayed at Saxaria House on Marine Drive. It was a joint family. Every floor there was two apartments, and there was a puja room, and you'd go and the women would be sitting and ringing the bell and doing their puja, and they'd have their Gita press, Bhagavad Gita and Sukh Sagar, and they would be reading. It was like a very nice atmosphere, and the husbands would go to work and make money. So Mr. Mota, he detected a new tendency in the women to go shopping. Yeah, instead of staying at home and doing puja, they wanted to go shopping. Actually, in the traditional system, even when we first came to Bombay, you didn't go out to shop. The sabjiwala would come to your house or your apartment complex, and everything you needed, they would come and bring it. You didn't have to go shopping. And he said that this will be the downfall of Vedic culture. That instead of doing puja, the women will go shopping. Later, I heard from a young lady, I mean, she was young at the time, who had married, she was a Gujarati, she had married and come to Los Angeles in the early 1970s. And she met Prabhupada, and they had like a very affectionate relationship. She was like a daughter or granddaughter. And they would talk very freely. So in those days, there were no department stores in India. If there were stores, they were specialized, you know, not like, anyway. So she told Srila Prabhupada, I want to see a department store, like we have one here, Shoppers Stop. Prabhupada said, no, don't go. And she said, oh, I just want to go once. I just want to see what it is. And Prabhupada said, no, don't go. Because if you go, you'll see things that you didn't want. You'll see things that you didn't even know existed, and then you'll want them. The same thing, Jayato Vishayam Punsam. And you will develop material desires and attachments, and as long as you have material desires and attachments, you can't go back home, back to Godhead. So after spending time, I mean, I've been to not so many places in recent years, but I've been to Delhi, Calcutta, and Jagannath Puri. And I've seen that the advertising in Bombay goes far beyond anywhere else. The way they depict the women, the men and the women, but especially the women. And the all the boards are just meant to get you to buy their products, but that sort of based on being like Americans, basically they're not just selling a shoe or a coat or a shirt or a pant. They're selling a way of life. They want people to buy into the American way of life and buy all the American products. I saw one, and they are really clever. I mean, some of the thinking that goes into the advertising is extremely cunning. And I saw one very clever one. It showed people wearing, I guess, short pants and t-shirts or something, jogging. And the advertisement said something like, you know, help the world become more fit. And then it said, you know, start something new. So this thing, jogging, you know, wearing short pants and t-shirts, that hasn't really come in much. They walk on the beach, but that hasn't come in. So it's like, start something new. Like, and like, not for yourself, but start something new. Make it a fad to go jogging. Not for yourself, but for the world, so the world becomes more fit. So it's like so clever. It's so clever, and people are so mesmerized by the material energy, they're like helpless. And I was thinking, like, they're spending so much on advertising. I mean, this whole, I don't even know if it's SV Road anymore, but from Juhu to Lokandwala, there's huge billboards with women, their heads uncovered, and it occurred to me that they are really going all out to target Bombay, because they need some place to enter India, to like really enter with this American lifestyle. So they figured Bombay is the place, and they're going all out, and they're demons. I mean, they're demons. One devotee told me, this goes back maybe 10 years ago, the Kellogg company wanted to introduce Rice Krispies, or I don't know what they call it here, basmati something. And that type of breakfast, cold cereal in cold milk, is completely against the traditional Indian culture. In the traditional Indian culture, the woman will cook breakfast. The husband and children will have a nice warm meal. So in the first year or maybe 3 years, the company lost millions of dollars. So there was a press conference, and one of the reporters said to the representative of the Kellogg's company that, you know, you've already lost millions of dollars. What you're promoting is completely against the Indian culture. You're promoting that the women don't cook. And they would be in the billboards, you know. Why should you cook for your husband? You just open up a box of Kellogg Rice Krispies and pour it in the cold milk. Now, why should you have to? So they're saying it's completely against the traditional culture, telling the women not to cook. And milk, they always have warm milk, hot milk, but the cold cereal doesn't go in the hot milk, it becomes soggy, and especially the Rice Krispies, you know, snap, crackle, and pop, it won't snap, crackle, and pop in hot milk. It has to be cold milk. They said, you're trying to introduce things that are completely against the traditional culture. And you're losing millions of dollars. And she replied, we don't care how many millions of dollars we lose or how long it takes, but we are determined to break that culture. And I'm seeing now, 10 years later, they've made a lot of progress. They've actually made a lot of progress. But still, we have to do what we can. We have to do what we can, as Srila Prabhupada said. They have their tactics and we have our tactics. We have our Harinam Sankirtan. We have our Rath Yatra. Rath Yatra is such a big festival to attract people and sort of draw their attention from this state of hypnotism of the material energy and help them to wake up to their real life and Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Take two more, Mahaprabhu Das and Bhakta Avatar Das. Or let's try Bhakta Avatar.
Maharaj, after a long time, such wonderful, powerful kirtan and powerful class, which before 30 years, very, very powerful class, Maharaj. We are very obliged to you. Same young, the way you are giving previously. Now, you have touched very important two points today in today's class. One is which you have given very, very personal thing which we have never heard. But it's a very, very important point which you have touched. Because I understand once, I don't know whether it's him, and Rajiv Gupta, who was giving article in Back to Godhead magazine, he's now PhD and very professor, married. Correct? Ravi Gupta, yeah.
Oh yes, Radhika Raman.
So when he was last year in Radha Gopinath Mandir, I asked, how can you maintain such a beautiful, highly educated, good earning money? How could you survive in America in a situation and many girls were studying together and how you could survive? And he said one very important point, because he said that, you know, whenever I was meeting any girl, I was all the time thinking, I know she is advancing towards me, but whether I am going to marry her. And once I take decision in my mind that I am not going to marry her, immediately I cut there only, that here and after I have not to proceed towards her. I know, Maharaj, previously when you were, I was going with you many times, hundreds of times in Bombay. And when Aditya Mataji were asked, you know, the situation when you were asking who will sit with the Matajis and all that thing, you are very, very particular for everything from the beginning, because you know how to deal with the situation. Such type of situation, when people are working together today, and, you know, when Srila Prabhupada clearly said that they are like, you cannot keep the water and fire together. So if that type of training is not here today, and we are seeing the result of this is coming out day by day, every day people are falling. So up to what extent one should go further, and how to live and work together, it is becoming very, very difficult. And the second point, Maharaj, you have mentioned, I don't know whether I connect it with this, the simple living. When we see many people live very opulently, how can we live simple? Because we think that even the sannyasi lives so opulently, why I should not also earn money and afterwards I will, how can I live simple living and high thinking? So these are the two very heavy points coming. Even in the varnashram dharma we want to follow, but still the desire to live luxuriously is always there. So, with the excuse that one day I will be able to serve Prabhupada.
Well, it sounds like the first point you're making is that the men and women should be kept apart like fire and butter. That's true. The if the fire, if the butter comes close to the fire will melt the butter. The butter has no desire to melt, but just by coming close to the fire, it will melt. That's true. But again, it depends on time, place, and circumstance, because there has to be some association, but generally it will be good if the women, like, preach to the women and engage the women, and the men preach to the men and engage the men. But there should be some men, maybe their husbands, who work with their wives, and that's true, general rule, varnashram. And as far as living simply, it's the same thing. It's if you're calculating, if you have the higher taste, then you'll think, okay, well, if I work a little harder, I can earn a little more money, and I can have a little better facility. But working harder means less time for chanting and hearing about Krishna, less time for associating with advanced devotees, less time for preaching. Then you'll think it's not worth it. That's the whole idea. It's not worth it. You won't give up something more valuable for something less valuable. You'll give up something less valuable for something more valuable. So, like Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone. He had the holy name, so the touchstone was not valuable to him. It was like garbage. So, but this has to be experienced. It can't just be theoretical. If it's theoretical, it will break down. It has to be experienced, and it can be experienced only if you practice very sincerely and seriously. And otherwise, you can speak from your mouth so many things, but if you're not experiencing the higher taste, eventually you'll want some taste from somewhere, and if you're not experiencing the higher taste, then you'll start gradually to experiment with other things and then get more and more entangled. Yeah, and even anyway. Okay, back to Avatar.
Thank you again, Maharaj, for a fabulous class. Very enlightening. Srila Prabhupada, he states in the second or third purport, in the Nectar of Instruction, Sri Upadeshamrita, he says, I founded this ISKCON society to facilitate these six loving exchanges between devotees. So does that mean that engaging in these six loving relationships is the most important aspect of devotional service for actually getting us to the supreme goal, which is going back home, back to Godhead, and experiencing Krishna Prema?
Yes, yes. It's very important, the association of devotees, and how to associate with devotees is explained in the verse. Dadati padigrinati guyamakyati prichati bhunte bojayate chaiva sadvipriti lakshana. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as quoted by Srila Prabhupada, says that the other side of it is that one should not mix intimately with non-devotees by those six processes. So you're right, it's very important. It's very important. On that matter of falling down, you know, I've discussed with various God brothers, and they all pretty much agree that to remain fixed, one needs two things. Taste for the holy name, taste for the spiritual practices of Krishna consciousness, and loving relationships with God brothers or God sisters for women. So that is very important. Very important. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi.